Hi, my name is Abby Glynn, and I'll be reading my essay, Meeting Scott and Stacy, which is about how my view on my parents changed the summer after my freshman year. Scott and Stacy fell in love in college. They lived in a shitty Jamaica Plain apartment, chain-smoked cigarettes, and drank a metric ton of alcohol every semester. They gambled with their friends and strategically partied their way through every club in Boston. Scott worked a day job and a night job to get Stacy through pharmacy school. They worked their asses off and made their own path in life, playing by their own rules. But then Mom and Dad decided to have me and downgraded from their big city apartment to a split in the suburbs. They stopped drinking and smoking Marlboro Reds, preferring 8 o'clock The Simpsons reruns over the Boston nightlife. Dad refused promotions, and Mom put her career on hold so they could raise us. They stopped doing whatever they wanted to and started doing whatever was best for the family. I knew Mom and Dad. I spent every day with them. But I had never really met Scott and Stacy. It wasn't until my freshman year that I was fully introduced. It was the last weekend of July, and the sun was bright. The air was hot, but not quite humid, and a combination of the sun's warm hugs and the light breeze made sunburns easily attainable. Ever since I could remember, my weekends have been spent getting those painful, peeling sunburns at a small marina with my family on our boat in Westport, Massachusetts. Westport was our hidden gem, like the Cape, but less traffic and way fewer sharks. Westport overflowed with boats and everything having to do with them. It consisted of spacious boatyards, family-owned boat shops, and shaggy boat dogs. But the most important of them all were the esteemed boat boys, graciously named by Dad. I had met a boat boy at a 4th of July party earlier that month. His name was Tommy. I wasn't quite sure where that was heading, if it was a fling or if he was the special boat boy I was meant to fall in love with. I did know that he was cute and had invited me to hang out with him and his friends on that last Saturday night in July. As a naive 15-year-old, I thought, of course. Hanging out in an abandoned boatyard with a bunch of random kids sounded like a great idea. So I said I'd absolutely love to, and my night of revelations began. Tommy and I planned to meet at 7 on a 61-foot yacht, the Gypsy. He still insisted that it was not a yacht, despite the fact that it had the same number of bedrooms and bathrooms as my house. Surprisingly, my parents were already on the yacht drinking wine and eating expensive yet nauseating goat cheese when I arrived. Mom and Dad had met Tommy's parents the same night that Tommy and I did, and they seemed to click just as fast. Mom and Dad usually kept to themselves, but it was summer, so the wine released their inner social butterflies. Before I left, I said goodbye and kissed them on the cheek. I told them that I'd wake them up before I went to bed, like I always do. Oddly enough, that was the first night in a long time that they went to bed later than I did. Tommy led me past the marina offices and back behind the shell-covered parking lot. We soon stumbled into a massive, eerie boatyard casting odd shadows all over the sandy ground. Someone held open a decaying wooden slab leading to an ancient barn. When I entered, I was greeted by four other kids, all huddled around a piece of plywood. One could mistake this gathering for a Bible study session and would be nearly spot on. The only difference was that the kids were worshiping two minuscule joints, not Jesus. And I, a self-conscious and endearingly innocent girl, was not planning on joining that congregation. As I sat awkwardly on a spare tire near the devoted teenagers, I began to question what I was even doing here. Eventually, the circulating joint found its way to me, and a long-haired boy named Chase nudged me to take it. I'm still not sure why I grabbed it, considering I didn't want to smoke from the beginning. And this was not because I had strong morals or because my body is a temple or any of that shit. I didn't want to cough and be embarrassed, and I knew I would. So I just passed it along to Tommy, who saw that I hadn't smoked and passed it too. Tommy and I then split a beer, meaning he drank all of it and I took little phantom sips until it was gone. And eventually, I began to enjoy the company of the stoners. Their relaxed nature made everyone able to let loose a little, even myself. This was until the film of calm placed over the teenagers evaporated. In what seemed like seconds, the stoners developed ravenous munchies, incredibly, all at the same time. One shorter, stubby kid who was rolling around in the dirt whispered, "Potato skins. I need potato skins now." Those two simple words started something out of my control, because before I knew it, all of the adolescent boys began chanting, "Potato skins! Potato skins!" while rampaging around the empty barn. In order to calm them down, Tommy and I agreed to walk over to the Gypsy and cook up some TGI Fridays microwave potato skins. I had never before experienced the intense craving one has for potato skins. But then again, I am not stoned out of my mind very often. As all the kids left the boatyard, imagining cheesy, bacon-laced goodness, I realized something that made my stomach turn. Our parents were standing in the kitchen, drinking wine, approximately 2 feet away from the freezer. The same freezer with the potato skins. The same freezer I would be rummaging through in minutes, close enough for them to smell my freaking Dove lavender deodorant, let alone the weed saturated in my clothes. And then I thought, it'll be fine, Abby. These kids don't need potato skins. They'll just forget about them. But believe me, telling a stoner they can't have potato skins is like telling a crackhead they can't have crack. They're gonna get it somehow. The last thing I wanted was the stoners sprinting into Gypsy, chasing after their carb-filled fantasies. All of their eyes glowed like sapphires, a shade of red no quantity of Visine could lessen. It was a much better shot for survival if Tommy and I just took the bullet, so I accepted the impending doom of my semi-sober parents realizing I had just spent an hour in a sticky barn that reeked of weed. So, great. Fantastic. Here I am, straight out of freshman year, having experienced virtually nothing, and I'm about to get caught for smoking the joint that I passed along the circle. How the hell is this fair? Knowing there was no escape, my anxious and irritated self walked along the dock, which felt more like a plank leading to the depths of the Atlantic. As my sweaty palms gripped the railing on the way up to the boat, I got that feeling that I was on an unstable roller coaster. You know, the wooden ones that nobody trusts anymore. I was climbing to the top on my unhinged, rusty little cart. I knew I was about to fall. Oh God, please don't make it bad. But then, the roller coaster reached the top and stalled for a moment. Everything stopped moving. My head, my heart, my whole world remained still as I stepped through the threshold. Immediately, the overwhelming scent of marijuana flooded my nostrils. I got stuck in a moment of confusion, thoughts leapfrogging through my brain. How did Tommy and I still smell so strongly of weed? We were in an open barn, not hotboxing the Suburban outside. There was no way I was radiating weed to the point where it filled all 61 feet of the Gypsy. And that, my friends, was when the roller coaster clicked just past the top notch. That one little notch, that one that causes the rusty cart to go plummeting down the hill at a million miles per hour. I saw an adult standing next to my parents quickly whip something behind his back, glowing embers and all. And then I saw another adult swipe the bag of crushed greens into their pocket, acting like we had not just been staring at it for the last 5 seconds. I bet the adults thought we'd think the bag contained oregano or something. How clever of them to carry around a Ziploc bag of kitchen spices for handy use. I glanced over at Tommy. His eyes were like glass marbles, kept open in pure surprise. I looked at my parents, who were dancing, then back at Tommy for a little, until I walked out of the boat. Had my parents and their friends been smoking grass and gypsy, like minutes ago? I was hurt at first, but in a weird way. Why had I never seen this side of my parents? What other bad things had they done? Did this make them bad people? To make up for this overwhelming emotion, my shock turned into laughter. I laughed for only a minute, but after our group returned to the barn, Tommy and the stoners laughed for an hour. While theirs was a genuine, hearty amusement coming from deep within, mine was uneasy. The pang of sadness I felt inside made me wonder if this situation was even okay to laugh at. Through all of this confusion, I had seen a glimpse of the old Scott and Stacy, not just Mom and Dad. The next morning, Stacy attempted to convince me that neither her or my dad had smoked that night, but some of the other adults had. She also ended up telling me about her college years and that her and my dad and their friends were once stupid teenagers. Stupid teenagers who made stupid decisions, just like me. I came to realize that it's unfair of me to just look at them as Mom and Dad and to judge them for being Scott and Stacy. And I'm not saying that Scott and Stacy, or Mom and Dad, are or have ever been potheads, because they aren't. They're good parents and people who deserve to have fun with their new friends, even if some of them do smoke weed. And they can also sort of hang out with whoever and do whatever they want. They were badasses in college, and they still are. A big part of understanding what happened was also accepting that their lives don't revolve around your ass, Abby. I had taken the idea of my parents possibly smoking weed as a personal attack. How could they consider smoking or even be around marijuana? They have children. But for a good 3 decades, they lived without the worries of parenthood. Scott and Stacy stressed over school and rent, not what brand of diapers were cheapest. Their nightmares were showing up to a college exam unprepared, never losing a kid at the mall. I've learned that Mom and Dad are only a small part of Scott and Stacy as a whole, the more reserved and rule-following side. The world really doesn't revolve around my ass. It can't. Other people have lives and different sides to them that I have never seen, so who am I to judge what I do see? With help from this humbling insight, I finally stopped being an immature kid and became an immature kid who just might be able to start growing up.
Hi, I'm Ella Kohler, and I'm going to ask Abby a couple questions about her essay. So, were you reluctant to publish this?
Yeah, I was, just because my parents are, like, professionals and they have jobs and stuff, but in the essay, I think I make it clear that they weren't, like, I didn't see them doing anything wrong, just, like, the people who they were with, like, made me, like, change their opinion, my opinion on them a little bit, and also, like, the situation they were in.
Mm-hmm. And then, did you show your parents the essay?
Yes, I did, My dad just said, show it to your mom, make sure she's okay with it. He thought it was really funny, and my mom thought it was sweet, and she was totally fine with it.
And then does it make you look at your parents any differently, or not really?
I think now I realize that, like, I can definitely talk to them about, like, a lot more than I could before, because I can talk to them about, like, if I make mistakes or something, or just like I'm not really afraid to share certain things with them because like I know in their past they've made mistakes and they also I just know more about them so I can like share more with them. So I think it changed it for the better.
Okay, great. Thank you.